Hello, everyone, and welcome back to No Script, an unscripted conversation about theater's best scripts. I'm Jackson, and that's Jacob, and we're excited and maybe a little sad, but also just mostly excited to be giving you the last episode of our themed month. We have gone through three one-act plays, not even one-act, like 10-minute plays, experience sort of plays, and we're excited to be coming back at you again with one more to kind of wrap up the themed month of this season of No Script.
Yeah, really glad to be here. Really glad to be talking about this play, which is just such a cool presentational storytelling play. Really different than anything that we've talked about so far. And that's really the thing about 10-minute plays. I mean, we've said it a couple of times during themed month, but it's one of the things that makes 10-minute plays so great is the license for experimentation. Because you're only asking the audience to endure 10 minutes of an experiment, you can do a lot. I mean, we all know the stereotypes and the jokes about being invited to your buddy's experimental play in the back room of a blah, 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 and it being, you know, hours long and horrible. And while those are jokes, it also has happened to anybody that's ever done anything.
It's not unheard of.
If you've been part of it, it's but 10-minute plays, if you get invited to your friend's 10-minute experimental play, at least you're like, it's 10 minutes.
It's 10 minutes.
I'm down. Whatever's going to happen, whatever you're going to try, it's 10 minutes. And so as a result of that, you get a lot of variety, a lot of experiments. I mean, my favorite 10-minute plays we're not even talking about in this particular month, and maybe we'll come back to them, but I love them because of how out there they are. And I don't know if that I would call this one out there, but it certainly has a very unique kind of theatrical lens that I don't know how long it could sustain over a whole play. I mean, I've seen plays of this style, but it, you know, oftentimes you have to intersperse long narrative sections with dialogue and action. And this particular 10-minute play, I realize we've waxed about it and haven't said the title, doesn't do that. This is a narrative storytelling play through and through by Marco Ramirez. The play is titled 3:59 a.m., A Drag Race for Two Actors. Marco Ramirez, we have talked about on the podcast before. We talked about his, I think, a different 10-minute play of his during the last short plays month, La Muerte. So excited to come back to him because this is a space he operates in so well. Unfortunately, because of episode 4, format where I don't think this time around I'm going to give him a full context section either. Marco, I promise we will find that moment, but it is not today.
Yes, yes. Excited to be returning back to Ramirez again for this conversation. Excited about this play, too. I agree that, like, the kind of core engine on which it runs is, like, so, like, energetic, so action-packed, and it really leans well into the 10-minute format for that sake of, like really, really intense, really grabs you and runs with you all the way to the end, and excited to have the chance to talk about it and about the characters that, like, take us on that journey. Journey together.
Yeah, well, and the characters and their unique situations that they bring into this strange encounter in the night that is this play are part of what makes it so great. I mean, this is a really nice example of a 10-minute play in which you have a problem for each character, an encounter, and not a solution to their problem. It's not like their situations are better, but a step towards the next thing for them on that journey. And in that way, it functions as the kind of snapshot that sometimes you see from 10-minute plays. Some of the plays we've looked at are, I would call them, more complete stories. Coffee Break, I think, is a more complete story. Even Ghost Bros, although you imagine that those characters have a future together, it feels like this story we've been here to tell. Both cover and the play today, 3:59 a.m., I feel like are more snapshots. There's definitely a life before that has led into this problem, and there's definitely a life after. And so what we see is just a sort of one step, one action in the journey. And it's delightful how satisfying and momentous that one action, that one snapshot can be.
Yeah, both satisfying in terms of, like, the play structure and organization, but also, like, how much of their story we get and how much knowledge we get of how this interaction is going to improve or not improve, but like has moved them forward in their life in some way that they really needed. Yeah. Very, very satisfying ending. Even as much as, or while at the same time as being like, we don't know their whole story, which is a fun paradoxical relationship of both satisfying, but also not all the information.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right now I'm in the middle of writing a narrative play for a commission that I've received. And reading this play in the middle of working on a longer form narrative piece was super valuable. Marco Ramirez is just so smart in the way that he uses narration and the way that the story is told and interspersed when he gives characters long stretches of direct address by themselves and when he gives them very, very short stretches, back and forth, one line, one word, back and forth, that pacing that becomes so important, especially in a story about a race. I mean, pacing is everything. And so his masterful use of that, I think, was so effective and will, I'm sure, pay dividends in the script that I'm working on. Before we get too much farther into this, because we've already said so much of what we love,
yeah.
We should take the moment just to invite you to head on over to our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/noscriptpodcast, all one word, no hyphen, no underscore. That's where you can become a supporter of the show. The folks over on Patreon are responsible for making this show happen. We love to do it, but it's not possible for us to do without that financial support. We're not rich, and taking a podcast, it just requires a certain amount of money to do in a reasonable way, and the way that we're doing it, it requires a fair amount of time investment too, and so it's just not possible for us unless we had that financial support on Patreon. So thank you to those of you who are supporting us over there. You're so influential. You matter so much to what we do. If that's not you yet, please think about it. There's various tiers that you can choose, monthly amount, lowest amount, $1 a month. $1 a month is hugely helpful to the podcast. Please think about that. Patreon.com/noscriptpodcast, and we will see you over there.
Yes, thank you all so much, and my thanks as well. Thank you for being patrons of the show, and we'll see you at patreon.com/noscriptpodcast. And now, back to the script.
I wanted you to have that one because I was going to do the synopsis, and it just
I appreciate
smoother,
it. You know, just gave me one out of themed
it's
month.
It's like
nice,
tossing
a good gesture.
You get a little bone from dinner.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, I'll take it. Thank you, thank you.
So, 359, A Drag Race for Two Actors. Brief synopsis. We are introduced to Laz. And Laz is, as the stage directions say, 19. We also get a description of his costume, which is a pair of flip-flops, a pair of gym shorts, and a field day t-shirt from sixth grade. He tells us about that costume because this is a direct address play. What that means is that the characters are not really talking to each other or in traditional scenes or actions. They are turned out to the audience and telling the audience what happened to them. Now, sometimes that narration becomes intertwined and they tell the story together in such a way that they almost play out the scenes in a real action-based way. But generally, this is a storytelling play. And so the characters are speaking to the audience, telling us about their experience. They're, of course, doing it in the present tense because that is how the best direct address narrative plays are done. Credit to you, Marco Ramirez. I don't have to tell you that. You should be telling me that because you're the expert. So again, we're introduced to Laz. Laz lives in a small apartment with a large group of people. Relatives of all kind are there, and there's various problems going on in this apartment, conflict with his parents, but also we learn that Laz's sister has recently left the house, and he says, we don't know where she is, and we don't talk about it. And we learn, too, that he wants to call his sister to check in on her to see what's going on, but that his family is strongly against that. And, in fact, he would be turning against his family in some way if he did that. We don't get a ton more details about that. Thus is the nature of 10-minute plays. But there's a rift there that his family does not want him to attempt to bridge. Because of this tension, he takes off. He leaves the apartment, gets in his Honda Civic, and starts driving around, driving very late into the evening until well past 2 a.m. Now we're introduced to Hector. Hector is working some sort of job, not totally sure what job it is, but it's a job in which he would work until very late at night. His boss is terrible, and he's finally, he's worked an unexpected double shift because his wife is pregnant, and they need the extra hours, so he's working very late into the evening. As he is on his way out of work, he gets a call, and the call is from his wife at the hospital, where she informs him that they have lost their baby. And he, of course, as you can imagine, is devastated by this news. And he also begins just driving around very late at night due to the emotional stress and trauma of this. He says that he knows that he should go straight to the hospital to be with his wife, but says that he can't, not because of her, but because of him. He's not strong enough, is what he says. So these two drive late into the night. They start to alternate descriptions of the street, talking about driving way out, sort of out of where they normally live, hours even away from where they normally live. And finally, they meet at an intersection, pulled up next to each other. These are strangers. They don't know each other. They don't ever talk. They simply look at each other between their cars, and they decide they're going to have a drag race here late at night. They rev their engine, and the character, I think it's Hector, who says he revved his engine, says, "I've never revved my engine before in my life. I don't even know how to spell revved." So this is not, these are not drag racers. These are two people in the middle of intense moments in their life, intense decisions, incredible stress, and that this is their moment to relieve that stress through a drag race. So they put pedal to the metal, literally, and shoot off along this stretch of highway where no one is. Part of the setup, of course, is that no one's out there, so we're not worried about them crashing into anybody. They're way out there where nobody is. And they
They go flying
into the night at top speeds, 80, 90, farther, 100, more. And finally, they begin to have a sort of supernatural encounter. They start to see light flying at them. They describe it as looking like hyperspace. And then colors. And then as they look at each other's cars, it looks like the cars are on fire, flying so fast. And they sort of black out. When they awake, they're sort of screeched to a stop there, again, in separate cars, out in the middle of an intersection. They do mention that there is like a streak of soot or marking along the sides of their cars. But otherwise, they are unhurt and fine. And they head off out there, back on their way. They move on from this encounter. Hector, who his wife's at the hospital, decides he's going to head straight for the hospital after being tormented about that decision. And then Laz, in the very final moments of the play, tells us that he is indeed going to call his sister, or in fact is calling his sister right now, right there, as the play ends. And that's 3:59, A Drag Race for Two Actors.
Yeah,
not a great title. Like, I just got to say, up front, I like A Drag Race for Two Actors. In fact, that might be what I would call it. 3:59 a.m., not a specific enough time to be memorable. I've known about this play for a while, and even I, like, have a hard time, and I have a pretty sticky memory for that sort of thing, like, have a hard time remembering the time. I'm like, something a.m., A Drag Race for Two Actors.
Got that part locked in.
I remember the second part.
Yeah, well, it being a drag race, I think one of my favorite kind of like just like initial reactions to this was I love the cars. The Honda Civic is a car that I've owned, and a Subaru is a car that I want to own someday. So like it was great choices on the cars, but also the way that the characters use both their descriptions of themselves and their descriptions of the cars to tell the stories is really well written and really fascinating to hear, because you learn a lot about these characters in a short time. And you certainly learn that from self-revelation / like testimony about their lives, but you also learn that from things like Laz talking about his Honda Civic as it sputters to life and the need to like turn the ignition the right way for it to come to life. You learn it from Hector, who says he got his Subaru at a CarMax and there's like Scooby-Doo wheel covers around the wheel of the car. So you're learning this whole intense experience, just 10 pages long. You're learning something almost every sentence about them, and the description of the way they interact with their cars is one of those pivotal ways that you're learning more and more about them.
No, totally. In fact, the relationship between Laz and Hector and their specific cars is a fair amount of the part of the play. It, you know, as we think about like two-handers, this is a two-hander, one of the things about two-handers is that if you only have those characters and their relationship, it's hard to show the many layers of a character because we all play different roles and different parts of ourselves in different relationships. And so across the whole play, if you have a character that has two or three or four or five or more relationships with the other characters, you see different parts of them. And in a two-hander, that becomes limited and harder to do. And so often in two-handers, you will see an offstage character, someone that person, one of the characters or both or more, will talk to, actually have dialogue with, either on the phone or calling off stage or telling us a story about the time that they talked to this person. And that'll be the playwright's attempt to show us that part of them. And in this play, you really don't get even that. I mean, both Hector and Laz describe other people in their life, but the actual encounters with them, we don't get much detail on. What we do get, I think you're entirely right, is their relationship to their cars, to their individual cars. One of my favorite parts of this play, it's a great line. Hector says, just after he's learned this terrible news about losing their child, he says, and this is the point where I realize I've memorized the geography of my Subaru. And he goes on to describe every little thing around him in his car. And he's got it because he's got his eyes closed. And he's realizing, I know what's around me without even having to look. And that, I think that's really astute observation, especially if you're a person that drives a lot. If you live in a big city, maybe this is not this, you won't have this same relationship with your vehicle. But for those of us that drive a lot, we do have a very intimate relationship with this space in a way that almost feels like another person. I mean, at least I do. Maybe I'm admitting something that other people don't feel. Like, you talk to your car, you know?
For sure,
like, it's stressing up. You're like, get there. It's all right. Hey, good boy, you know? And it's like, you know, oh, come on. And you might give your car a name. You might refer to your car with specific pronouns or feel like it has a specific personality. Cars can be, not for everybody, but can be a really intimate relationship.
Yeah, and the choice of these characters to navigate a difficult moment of their life via that intimate relationship, I think it speaks volumes to the cars themselves. And also the way, like, this is, again, sort of a meta thought. This is why it's unscripted. It's fun. But in general, like, the safety of a car alone, especially in times when it feels like out of control is happening, it's a great metaphor for personal control, because it is still one of those, like, accessible things for a lot of people where personal control actually feels present. And so having these characters go from spaces where they don't feel like they have any personal control to the safe space of their cars until, you know, they get to a flow state and not wake up, but realize it's 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or 3:59 a.m. And that journey is a really cool move for them to move from these spaces of disempowerment into one where they feel empowered.
Yeah. I mean, it just is a personal anecdote. I think probably the biggest fight I ever got into with my parents in high school was about my car and, you know, sure, about me feeling like it was like my space and a reflection of my personality. And I don't even remember exactly what the fight was about, but I remember that was like one of our bigger, more heated arguments, which seems silly until you reflect on, I think, what you just said, the feeling of your car. And I realize it's a great privilege to have a car. Not everybody in the world has their own personal car. But if you're somebody that drives a lot and you drive every day and you have a car that you drive every day and it's yours in some either specific legal way or more metaphorical way, you do begin to feel that way about it being you. It's almost like you somehow. And the same reason why it can feel really peaceful and safe to be in your car alone can also feel like tormenting and awful to be packed into your car with a bunch of people or loud noises. And it's sort of the same but alternating versions of that.
Which is why it's interesting that the transformation moment for these characters, certainly there's comfort in the car and being alone, but the breaking in of one another into each other's kind of solo experience in their car is a really interesting moment of even though the kind of retreat into the safety of the space of the car is a real thing. the journey towards transformation and towards some form of progress for both of them lies in their paths crossing. And the two of them kind of at least acknowledging nods. Neither of them say a word to each other, I don't think.
I actually think that is important because there is a you know, if you're pulled up next to somebody in your car alone and they're in their car alone, there is a feeling of like your car being you.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, it's almost like it's not even another person in another vehicle. It's like one thing, the person in their vehicle and you and your vehicle. And so the fact that they don't roll down their windows and talk, that they don't get out and meet, that they don't get into each other's car. I mean, Marco Ramirez has really imagined the kind of situation in which their cars and them are these sort of solo creatures in this competition, in this strange supernatural experience.
Yeah, yeah. And so you kind of have the, like, both the protection, but also I don't know, it feels like when Laz and Hector kind of have that first initial nod, there is this sense that we're in a similar spot tonight. Like, we found each other 3:59 a.m. in our cars alone in the middle of nowhere. We're in a similar spot. We both need this. And the kind of lean into that moment is such a, like, interesting sort of, like, nonverbal again. Super cool, especially in juxtaposition with how verbal the actors are being.
Yes.
But to have their moment of connection be nonverbal, super cool juxtaposition.
No, I love that observation. I mean, this is a play about something that happens that is entirely silent. Not, I guess not quite the sound of the vehicles, but nonverbal. I mean, this is an encounter that involves no words. And the way that Marco Ramirez tells us the story of this encounter that involves no words is with exclusively a mountain of words. And so we talk sometimes on the podcast about matching content and form, and that's so satisfying artistically and as an audience member. This is an example of flipping it, of having content and form be on the far ends of the spectrum.
And how interesting
that is, because it's just a nonverbal. I mean, the human beings themselves are silent with each other. So what is going on inside their heads? How did they get here? We learn all that through this like stream of description from them.
Which, like, grabs you right away too. I think I said that initially in the intro, but just the way the descriptions hit you and the way that the dialogue goes back and forth really super grabs you, draws you in very quickly. The other piece, so I want to talk a little bit about the, like, last, really, like, probably the last fifth of the play, the sort of, like, spiritual experience or the, a metaphysical experience that they go through. But then also the, like, the end of the play, because as I read through it twice and I was like, I really focused on the last scene the second time because I was like, is one of them dead at the end of this? And I just, like, wanted to be sure that they weren't. I don't think they are. I think we're on the same page in terms of they're both alive. They both leave. They both are transformed. But there is this moment of, like, there's burn marks on the car. Somehow I think Hector is outside of his car at the end of the race. And so there is this, like, sort of, like, supernatural thing that happens to them in the course of the race. And then it's some move of transformation that like has some fire involved, has some, like, maybe water/rain/light involved, and it's super, super cool and it moves them through it. But it is one of those scenes that's like, wait, what happened? Is everyone okay?
Well, yeah. And so after going through this crazy supernatural experience, I think Hector does stay in his car. I'm not sure either of them leave. But when they come back to after this hyperspeed craziness, one of the things that Marco Ramirez has done in writing the play is that, again, because it's a storytelling play, they're not actually doing any of this. They're just telling us about it. And so the one thing that they do in the whole play is act out this final moment together. In fact, the stage direction is, for the first time, they look at each other. And so what has happened is they've woken back up after their crazy experience. Everything's back to normal. The cars seem like they're fine, other than the burn streak on the car. They reflect that they're fine. And then what happens is that Laz gives Hector a head nod. And the stage direction is a beat. Something's changed. the stage direction before, of course, Laz shoots him an alpha male head nod. Those stage directions are important because up until now, I'm just reading myself a little bit, but just to make the point, they've not actually done the things they're describing. Now they do. This is the one, like, acted, quote unquote, and I mean that in like a in an embodied sort of way rather than storytelling, the one moment of it, and it's the moment that is supposed to be the thing that changes them. I don't know that the race itself is the thing, or if it's this connection, this togetherness, this stranger to stranger in the night encounter that is the thing that changes them, that causes them to both take a step forward in this path that they're on.
Yeah, that's good. I really like that observation. I think the temptation is there to be like, the race changes them. But I agree that the connection and probably the sight or the knowing that, you know, 10 years apart in age and different situations, certainly, there is a sort of like a shared emotional state, at least between the two of them, and they kind of are. Perhaps the feeling is of not feeling alone is what changes and allows them, gives them strength to kind of be like, okay, I can go back.
I think that's it. It's the not feeling alone, because the situation for both of them, although they come from very different situations, is such that they're in such distress that they're out driving at this point in the night. There's that. But then they're also in such distress that both of them do something that's not characteristic for them. That we get the sense from both of them that they're not street racers. Right, I mean, the dude drives a Honda Civic and a Subaru. Right, right? These aren't drag racing cars. This is not what's the fast car series? Fast and the Furious. This is not Fast and the Furious, right? These are just cars that you regularly drive. So I think the head nod moment is about we both recognize that we've been through that we are in a place of needing to have gone through that. And the connection of someone else is in a place like that not aloneness. I mean, because aloneness is a huge part of the first 4/5 of the play. I feel alone. I feel isolated from my family. And so because of that, I go out by myself. I drive to a place I've never been, to a place it seems like nobody's ever been. Way out there, by myself, in the dark, in the night. And you meet somebody and you say, I'm not alone.
Yeah, not alone, and not only that, but like we've shared this sort of feeling before, and yeah, I think the way forward for them, you know, it'd be interesting to do like a 50 years later conversation with them meeting once again, but yeah, this snapshot of their life is not, you know, not full of context, and so it's just a kind of high stakes moment for them to kind of meet and work through what they're going through, which is just great form for a play. The way that this I love 10-minute plays in general, because you can really see this situation happening to someone and them being like, that would be a great play. and you can just be like, you know, you just get this little bite of life. It's not the slice of life of naturalism. It's just like a small bite of a moment. And that moment is the seed of an idea that leads to just a short 10-minute experience. And I just love the way that this experience is laid out in this play.
No, I totally agree. We're out of time for this episode and for this themed month. It's been great to spend these couple of episodes with 10-minute plays. Love 10-minute plays. We'll have to come back at some point, but we will be headed back to our regular programming next week to full-length plays and full-length episodes. It's been a blast.
Yeah, thank you all for going along for the ride. Though we are at the end of the themed month and the end of this particular podcast, we would love to stretch the arms of conversation out to all of you and have you join in the conversation. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, or X at the username at NoScriptPodcast. We also have a Gmail, NoScriptPodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on any of those sites. We'd love to keep talking about these plays with you.
Absolutely. If you've liked this conversation, any of the conversations of our themed month or this season or our now almost 12 full seasons, please recommend us to your family, your friends, anybody you know that likes theater, conversations about stories and writing and characters and themes and all that great stuff. They can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, any of the places you normally find your podcasts. You can also like our Facebook page, and a link to the new episode appears every Monday when we publish. We're back next week with another conversation about another great script.
Yes, indeed. Get excited for that. Get excited for the full-length conversations and the rest of the season with all of its hallmarks coming to you soon.
Until then, I'm Jacob. That's Jackson. Thanks for joining us for No Script, the podcast.